I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Story time with the OG. I gave him homework yesterday. I can't say he always does the homework I give him, but he did it this time. I'm just kidding, John. I'm just kidding, dude.
Tell me a story, OG.
I will.
The man to my right's been covering Houston sports and traveling around the country for about 30 years. And he's covered some of the best events in the entire history of not just local sports, but sports in general. And yesterday when we were discussing the Texans counting down their top 100 moments and just the difficulty of putting together a top 100 list, I challenged the man to my right to put together the 25 most memorable moments of his entire career. And not only did the OG come through, not only did the OG drink six cups of coffee last night and stay up till 3 a.m. to do this, he put Figgy to work too because he sent audio to remember this. So we're going to revisit the 25 top memories of the OG's career throughout the show. We're going to start with the first five, 25 to 20. And along the way, just like you always do right here on In the Loop, you're going to get some OG wisdom, and he's going to take us back in time and let us know what it was like to cover these memorable events throughout the history of sports.
First things first, I could have done 125 or 150. I want to be very serious here for a second. I get how lucky a dude I've been in my career. The majority of my career, I've been waiting for someone to tap me on the shoulder and say, "All right, we figured it out. You're done. You know, you shouldn't be doing this." I get how lucky I've been because not only when I came to Houston, and one of my 25 was before I came to Houston, but the majority of them were when I came to Houston. I thought I could have been a beat guy, you know, maybe Rockets, maybe Oilers or whatever. But they asked me to be like I do everything, a national college football writer and an international writer on the Olympics and the World Cup and other international events. I get how lucky I've been for a kid from inner city San Antonio that never even left the state of Texas until he was in college. You know, I want to say that. I mean, it's really, really fortunate what I've done being able to pursue that dream. So I did this homework assignment. I keep daily planners, every daily planner I've ever had. Remember those black books?
Yep.
And everything I've ever done, I've written in there as a calendar reminder. Obviously, we do that now with technology. So I was scrolling through them, remembering some things, and I put together 25. It could have been 150 or more.
Well, it keeps going up. It goes from 125 to 150. Okay,
whatever it is. So I think there's a story behind these because I did not put Oilers Bills because that's not happy for me. I did not.
So you're only staying happy. Well, happy not, vibes only
for the most part. Just my most interesting, memorable moments in this business that I actually was at, that I actually interviewed people for. Etc. Like I was at the Oilers and Chiefs here. I don't want to see Joe Montana in my doing that again. I was at the Albert Pujols Brad Lidge game. That's not on the list because I don't.
That's a damn good column though that you wrote there. That's a damn good.
I remember. I remember it. So the first one on my list, number 25, is on the list because it was the first event I ever covered as a writer in Houston. It was. January 1st, 1990, I got hired late in 1989 out of San Antonio, and before I even got my temporary apartment, I was here.
Trying to wrap up a win that they were a two-point favorite coming in. Johnson, he has a touchdown! A drive entirely on the ground, basically from tackle to tackle, as the offensive line of the Irish held at center. Ryan and Grunhardt, the guards. Brennan and Brown, the tackles, and the tight end, Derrick Brown, just out-hit, out-moved the Colorado defense.
Notre Dame upsets number one Colorado in the 1990 Orange Bowl. I was there before I even came to Houston, and it was ironic because I got offered a job to Miami at the same time I was offered a job in Houston. I ended up going there first for there. 1990 one.
Number 24.
1991 was number 24. Backstory here. I may have told you this in the past. I was invited. I was covering the Pan American Games in Cuba, Havana, Cuba. We were all the American journalists were followed and were watched very carefully by the Cuban Secret Service, whatever they are. They had guys at the outside your elevator on every floor. They had guys that followed you, et cetera, et cetera. Then we were invited to a reception before the United States played Cuba in women's basketball for the gold medal.
Okay.
And we were at this reception, and Fidel Castro was there.
Wow. Did you shake his hand?
Well, funny you said that, because I was standing next to a writer then from USA Today, now a columnist at USA Today, Christine Brennan, and she kind of looked at me and she said, "I don't want to shake this guy's hand." I said, and so did another writer, and I told him and her, I said, "Well, let's just kind of sidle over to the other side of the room and just go eat or something and just avoid him," because I didn't want to either. So I got to spurn Fidel Castro in that reception and then cover this.
The crowd of 12,000, including Fidel Castro, will erupt in 33 seconds. What a victory for this young Cuban team if they can hang on the remaining seconds. The crowd going wild.
That was the Cubans women actually beat the United States for the first time.
Wow, you're a jinx.
There in Havana.
If you would have shook his hand, they would have won.
I didn't.
I'm blaming it on you not shaking. You should have taken one for the team the dictator's hand.
I'm so proud. I refused, even though he didn't really know it, I just kind of walked away, to shake Fidel Castro's hand. 1 year later, 1992, Barcelona, Spain.
We're counting down the OG's best moments in his storied journalism career.
Number 23. 1 year later in Barcelona, Spain, it was the most anticipated event maybe in 50 years in the Olympic history, because for the first time ever, the United States was tired of losing the gold medal in basketball after losing in 1988 for sure the gold medal and then losing a world championship in 89 and 90. So they sent the dream team.
Rebound Barkley.
That was against Angola.
Of Barkley under the basket against three players, draws the contact, and then tries to make a little room for himself in the lane area.
You covered the Dream Team?
Yeah, 1992.
How come you never told me this?
I thought I had.
Wow.
I covered three of their games. That was my favorite. Because
were
that
they
was
as big a rock stars as they made it out to be?
Dude, we went to, they practiced somewhere. And Fran Blindberry went to cover their practices, and I went straight to Barcelona.
Fran's a hard ass, dude.
Yeah.
He is a hard ass.
And he was telling me, I mean, it was like 12 Michael Jordans. I mean, people were taking pictures. I mean, it was like a Beatles concert when they would get off a bus.
Damn.
Anywhere.
That's awesome.
And so we got to cover them, and that was the Angola game, my favorite, because that's when Barkley threw that little Angola dude around. And so I got that. Number 22. Or was that? Or, yeah, that was number 22. I ended up getting a book out of the deal. It's one of the most memorable for me personally, because I knew the family going in, and she, being Carrie Strug, was one of the most overlooked people of that team going in. But then this happened.
Carrie Strug, it is up to her. If she can score 9.493 or better, then she will win the team gold. For the USA, she's the last to go. She's the only one who can do it. Oh! Carrie is hurt. A 9.712. She has done it. Carrie Strug has won the gold medal for the United States team.
I still got a chill right there listening to it.
She landed the hell out of that, too.
I was standing about...
She was crying.
Oh, I could hear the break. I was sitting about 10 feet away.
Okay, Daniela.
I could hear the break on it, and as a little follow-up the next day, and I was so happy for her and her family, you know, Dr. Strug and his wife, they called me the next day. They had 200-and-something messages on their hotel phone line, and asked for some help, and, you know, they ended up writing that book when that came along. Number 21. I will never forget it for two reasons, because it was one of the most memorable things I've ever seen in my life. And my column was done. All I had to do was press send.
You made a mistake. I see where this is going.
But I didn't press send because I was captivated by this.
Miller for three.
Ooh.
And he got
wow.
it. Reggie Miller with a clutch tray. And it's 105-102. And a steal. Miller retreats to the three-point line and hits again.
You were there?
Yeah.
Tie game. Starks misses. Batted around. Ewing has it. His shot no good. Reggie Miller the rebound and a foul with 7.5 seconds.
And Pat Ryan.
Say
what is going on here?
Yeah, he was,
dude. So you know how I remember where I was at every game?
I could tell you exactly where I was.
You were there, but I remember where I was every game. I was shooting baskets outside, and we had one of those old like antenna ear TVs in the garage.
Yeah,
and I just went outside and shot because I was watching the game. So I was shooting hoops, and then all of a sudden I heard like them going crazy, dude. And I had to go back and watch the replay. I was outside shooting hoops when that happened.
When he did, I've never done this in my life. I was like on the second row on the baseline, you know, riding. I was ready to send. And when he did the choke sign to Spike Lee, you know, remember he did the choke sign? I like stood up and threw my chair back and I was like, what? What just happened? I was like a fan all of a sudden, just screaming. Number 20, I didn't bring any audio because we're gonna go through 15 in this segment.
We are.
But number 20 was
Tell me a story, OG.
Really, really special to me. Because I watched her when she was 13 years old come into the limelight. Michelle Kwan was a heavy, heavy, heavy favorite after in ladies figure skating in Nagano, Japan. So I went to Nagano for the Olympics, and this was 4 years after 4 years after Tonya Harding and the lowest point in women's figure skating, and Tara Lipinski ended up at 15 years old winning the gold medal and becoming an Olympic icon in Nagano, Japan. Number 19, you said something earlier about memorable finishes and actually being there. I'll tell you the story before we hear the audio. I was standing in the end zone walking across the field.
I think I know where this is going.
To go to one locker room.
I think I know where this is going.
I decide to stop with a couple of other riders and watch the final play of the game.
I know where this is going.
It's coming right at me. If you stop the video, you can almost see you can see my legs. You can almost see me in the video when you see it. And the rest is history.
Let me get one more play. One more in 6 seconds. Three wide outs at the top of the picture. Stewart. Let's it go. He's got three people down there. The ball's up in the air.
Cordell Stewart to Michael Westbrook in the end zone against Michigan, the Hail Mary.
I was walking to the Michigan locker room.
You were right there?
I was in the end zone. Because you know the last 2 minutes, they let the media go down to the field?
Wow.
And I was walking to the Michigan locker room to get the reaction in the story. That was number one versus number two or number one versus number three, I think. I forget. And Cordell Stewart hits Michael Westbrook. I just did an about face, went to the other locker room, talked to Rick Neuheisel, who was the offensive coordinator who called that play. Jets, Rocket, something was the name of the play. Jets, Rocket, something. I forget.
I thought it was just called Throw It Up and Close Your Eyes.
Yeah. And number 18 is also have a really interesting story because after the game, the Americans, so that's a hint, started kicking balls into the stands because they were celebrating game balls, official game balls. And I caught one. I still have it in my office. You've seen it, I think. This is in 2002.
Terrific ball to pick out Eddie Lewis. And Donovan's arriving here. It's 2-0. And the USA can dream of reaching the quarterfinals. The country officially placed last at France 98 are going into the last eight.
I have no idea what that is.
USA, Mexico, your biggest arch rival in the World Cup in Seoul, South Korea. I was sitting in the stands. I was a ticketed customer. Another interesting story right there, actually. Our new editor, Jeff Cohen, decided to send me to the World Cup in 2002, but we hadn't gone through the credential process. All I could do was get a press conference credential. So they actually allowed me to buy tickets to all the games that I was covering. And so that was the United States. That was Eddie Lewis to Landon Donovan for the clinching game-winning goal that sent the United States for the first time, I think since 56 or something like that, to the quarterfinals of the World Cup in Seoul, South Korea. I think they ended up losing to Germany in that quarterfinal, but one of the greatest moments in USA soccer history. And they were kicking soccer balls into the stands, and I caught one. I still have it in my office from the 2002 World Cup.
Impressive.
All right. This could be my number one or number two, because I just did this in loose order, but also chronological order. I was actually not working at the Houston Chronicle. I was working at the San Antonio Light. It was before I came to Houston, but it was the biggest college football game. They were calling it Game of the Century, and they called it Catholics versus Convicts.
Oh, gosh.
Notre Dame's biggest upset since they ended the Oklahoma streak. Here is the moment. There's no greater love affair than that between the student body of this school and the football team.
Let
and
it
they
play
are embracing one another now down on the field here in South Bend.
Okay. You have Lou Holtz's interview after that? Oh, you just cut it. Okay, that's fine. So Catholics versus Convicts, that was in 1988. Jimmy Johnson had, the year before, won a national championship with the Miami Hurricanes, and they were some bad dudes. And that was one of the worst nicknames for a game ever.
It wouldn't go today. I can promise you. We're counting down the 25 best moments of the OG John Lopez's illustrious career, and I'm getting jealous as hell, and we're not even halfway
through. Well, you're going to be really jealous of this one because I was standing about 20 feet behind, because, again, at the end of the game, you go down to the field in college football, about 20 feet behind the mascot. I'm not going to say the mascot's name because you know what I'm talking about for this game in 1991.
This will be a 34-yard try, and this is for a win. This could be for a national championship. It's up! Missed it to the right!
Wide right, Florida State, Miami.
That was wide right one. I was also at wide right two, so I kind of combined them, but we don't have the audio for wide right two. But that's when Bobby Bowden runs out like he won and then realizes that the kick missed. And Ibis, I was standing behind Ibis. He starts going crazy and rolling around on the ground and everything. That was one of my favorite ones as well. 15 was, we don't have the audio for this, but I think y'all will remember a certain game-winning home run in game five, Jeff Kent, in the 2004 National League Championship Series. One of the most memorable home runs in Astros history. But still not the most memorable Astros memory for me, and I've told you the backstory for this. Number 17, or what did I – am I doing the numbers wrong? I think it's number 17 right now. And RIP, number 17.
Fans at least are on their feet now.
1-2 pitch. Swing and miss, strike three, a no-hitter for Darryl Kyle.
We've called a lot of things here this year, Francis. That was exciting.
RIP number 57, Darryl Kyle, no hitter.
I've told you all the story
about
this. Yeah,
the guy that was supposed to cover the story was too drunk.
Well, yeah. Late, great Neil Holfeld. That's the first Astros game I covered all year, and it was in September.
He was too drunk to cover the game.
And he was on his off day, and he came up and said, I said, you can take the game. It's your beat. You know, I'll just do a sidebar or something. He goes, no, you're right. So I wrote the lead story on Darryl Kyle's no hitter, literally introducing myself to Darryl Kyle in the clubhouse.
What are you doing, John Lopez?
Afterwards. Talk about March Madness, and I've been able to cover a lot of fantastic March Madness. My favorite March Madness team was probably UNLV in 91, I believe.
Stacey Ogden, Greg Ogden, Anthony, the Tark, Larry Johnson.
Yep, Larry Johnson. I also I didn't cover Phi Slamma Jamma. I was still in school. So probably that was my favorite team. But say what you will about upsets, to me, there will never be an upset like this one.
Go play if they can get it.
Under 10. Back door.
Oh, yes! He got it! 3-point
miracle!
For so many years, 29 seasons at Princeton, Pete Carril had come close to pulling off the big upset.
Beat the defending national champs. I was sitting on the baseline on that one as well. Princeton beats UCLA in the NCAA tournament, the defending national champions.
Shout out to Ed O'Bannon.
All right. You might like this one. I'm gonna give one more first. We don't have the audio for it, just for the sake of the segment here.
Counting down the OG's best moments of his career.
I'll never forget the clubhouse atmosphere in 2005 when Roy Oswalt pitched the game of his life in St. Louis after the Brad Lidge, Albert Pujols game. Everybody thought, oh, no, here we go again. The Astros are going to blow it. Going back to St. Louis, I believe he three-hit the Cardinals, shut them out. Roy Oswalt with the pitch of the game of his life in 2005 to send the Astros to their first ever World Series. And then this is number, what did I say, 11?
Count there.
Number 11.
Just forgetting how to count, Figgy. And all this experience.
The reason this one is important to me is because all these live tweets and live blogs and, whatever you're doing live with sporting events, this was the first ever Cron.com live blog.
Okay.
I was the first person, and the way we did it back then is it wasn't Twitter. So what we did is we had a live blog that people could post comments as I'm posting comments also. So it would be like a 10 or 15 or more, 30-second delay. I would post something about a play that I just saw, and then they would be a comment, and then I'd respond to the comment. But technically, that was the first live tweeting or blogging of an event at Cron.com.
Cool.
And I did it at this game.
Fourth and five, the national championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Vince Young scores.
As we said, Keith, you can have the perfect defense called. You can force him out of the pocket, but you're not going to beat him. Invincible.
Good ass block by Justin Blaylock. Good ass block by Justin Blaylock.
I thought that'd get you going.
He was running towards me. I was in section 24, row 39, seat 1. It was an end zone seat. I was there. It was the end zone where Reggie Bush lateraled. It was the end zone where Vince ran into. The best game that I've ever been a part of. Texas tops USC, and the OG was live blogging it.
Live blogging it. Next, Craig Biggio's 3,000th hit. We don't have the audio for that, but everybody remembers it. And just an incredible moment to be there. Having covered Biggio from when he got here almost, I think he got here in 88 or 89, and I got here in 1990. It was really special to me to be there to watch Biggio do that. Also special to me, even though we know some of the other circumstances involved, our sports editor had this crazy idea. Lopez, pack a bag. Go on the road for the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it takes.
Gosh.
We got two guys vying for history. We want you to be there when it happens.
No.
And so finally, I think after about 9 days on the road, traveling back and forth from city to city, I got to be witness to this.
The man of the hour, Mark McGwire, who is 0-for-1 tonight, his second at bat here in the fourth. Down the left field line. Is it enough? Gone! There it is! 62! Touch first, Mark. You are the new single-season home run king.
That was where he jumped over first base because he was so excited.
It had to go back.
That one left the yard real quick. Did you know they were yoked up?
I knew they were taking Andros Thindion.
Yeah, because he got caught in
his
locker.
No, when you would interview him after games, you could see a big old bottle of Andros Thindion.
But you didn't know he was yoked up?
I knew it was on the ban list, but what does that mean? Was it going to be testing positive? At the time, I feel ignorant now. At the time, it was just like supplements. You know, like creatine was a big popular thing, and it wasn't banned. I mean, Biggio admitted to taking creatine, which is now banned, but it wasn't banned then. So I didn't know, but now, of course, you know better. All right, 1996. I've often said this about my career covering the NBA at the Houston Chronicle because I was a beat writer in San Antonio, but at the Chronicle, the beat writer got to choose where they go, where they went. And Eddie Sefko and then...
Shout out to Eddie.
Eddie Sefko was was the beat writer at the time at the Houston Chronicle, and he would always want to go west for obvious reasons. L.A., Phoenix.
Marijuana.
You know, all the cool places, which means every year... I had to go to the East. I covered probably 60 games or more of Michael Jordan in his prime. And I also covered this finals game.
17 seconds from game 7 or from championship number 6. Jordan open. Chicago with the lead. 5.2 seconds left. Michael Jordan running on fumes with 45 points.
If that's the last image of Michael Jordan, how magnificent is it?
It was. He pushed off, but it was.
Wow. Well, we saw him in the Wizards.
He pushed off, but we saw him in the Wizards. Got to cover Tiger Woods a lot here at the Champions Course when he was in the Tournament Champions Championship. Certainly at the Masters and some other events. But I will never forget walking 18 holes with the greatest round of golf, four rounds of golf I've ever seen and I know I will ever see. He won the U.S. Open by 15 strokes.
Well, it's inside right edge and solid.
And Tiger Woods is the 100th U.S. Open champion in history.
That it was. 1992, we go back to Barcelona where I saw the Dream Team earlier, and we played that audio. My personal favorite, because I knew him real well, I know him real well, he did not qualify for the 100-meter dash because of a bad start or an injury or something like that. And so finally you get to go against the hated and awesome British 4x100 team. And this guy ran right in front of me. I was on the finish line about 20 rows up, and it was maybe one of the greatest performances of his life.
And look at Carl Lewis go. Linford Christie behind the Nigerians and in Zinwa. And on the inside, the Cubans. United States first, and it's between Nigeria and Cuba on the inside, and the world record has gone. 37.40. And Carl Lewis has anchored them home. 37.40.
So I'm going to give you two that we don't necessarily have audio for, but they were the most important to me. The Super Bowl comes here in 2003, and I had this idea to talk to, and I'd known him a little bit at the Ryder Cup. I hanged out with him a little bit at Olympic Games in Greece and elsewhere.
Bad and bougie.
I got to speak with him a little bit. So I had this idea to sit down with former President George H.W. Bush.
Oh, wow.
And write a column about Houston's first fans, you know, the Bushes. You know, Barbara Bush always kept score at the baseball games. He was always at the Ryder Cup and other events and baseball games and such. And so I sent out an email, and sure enough, you know, within just a matter of hours, I get an email back. You know, he kind of knew who I was because we had met and obviously read me in the Chronicle and invited me to his office. On the west side, off of Westheimer, on the west side of town.
Bad and bougie.
Like the next day or whatever.
Did you get a drink?
Days. What do you mean?
I'm always intrigued, but like nice offices, like what they offer you to drink. Just
oh,
water
yeah, yeah,
or
yeah.
What?
Well, wait till you hear, because so I go to his office. I'm sure it's still there. I don't know if his people are still there or not. No, because there's still a George Bush
you
office.
Need to break some news
you
to
know,
you?
You know what I'm saying? He still has an office. Okay. Because of all the people that want to know about him. Anyway. So I go up to whatever floor it is, and the elevator doors open, and in front of me is a bulletproof glass.
Damn.
With a Secret Service agent standing behind it holding a pistol.
No way.
100%
like
true.
Like right when you got off the elevator?
First thing you see. And then you just go up to him and say who you are. And, oh, yeah, okay. And so then they open the doors.
Did he at least put the pistol in his pocket
or
something?
Well, it wasn't pointed at me, you know, but you know, what I'm saying is, so I get in there. This is one of my favorite all-time stories. This is why I'm one of my top five. So I get in there, and I sit down with the former president, and we talk for about an hour. I mean, he just loves sports so much. And I shared a little bit of the story when he passed because it's when I really got to know him the best. And we just talked everything. Aggie football, he's a big Aggie. Fishing, he's a big fisherman. I mean, we just hit it off big time. And plus, you know, we're talking about the Super Bowl and the first fans and all that. So then we're sitting there, and it's about an hour has passed, and we're talking about all the things. And this is actually in the archives. If you want to read the column I did on him from 2003, it's in the Cron.com archives. So we're kind of wrapping up, and I stand up, and he goes, hey. And I can't do a George Bush, but.
Yeah, don't.
He goes, hey, do you want to see some really cool guns that I have?
What?
He had in his next room, in the next office room, he had a collection of a bunch of the gifts that he's gotten, shotguns, rifles, pistols, because he was an outdoorsman, you know, and he knew that I was. So I go in there, and he pulls out this big, long shotgun that has all kinds of engravings and gold on it and stuff. And he hands it. He hands it to me. So I'm holding a shotgun in front of the president, the former president.
Is it loaded?
I don't think so, but I'm holding it in front of him. And he goes, just feel that. Let's feel how good that feels. And I kind of hold it up.
What is going on right now?
I hold it up to my shoulder. And as I hold it up to my shoulder, kind of pointing it out in the distance, I snap. You know how you snap sometimes? And I went, oh, crap. What if that Secret Service agent that I just passed happens to look at the camera in this room and sees me holding a shotgun next to the former president? I mean, they would be rushing the room and taking me down and everything else. And so I said, oh, I got all nervous. I said, oh, thank you, Mr. President. And I gave it back to him. And some king of some, you know, country somewhere gave him this shotgun. And so he let me hold it, took it out of the case. And so that is one of my all-time top five stories.
Good
right
Lord,
there.
Man. Where are you going to go from here? That's number five.
That's number five.
In the top 25 moments of the career of John Lopez. Where are you going to go from there?
I'll go to the next one that we don't have audio on, but it's in my top five. We'll have audio for the next three. And that is the 2006 Winter Olympic Games in Salt Lake City. I'm sitting there at the opening ceremonies, and they bring in the Olympic flag, right? And so, if you remember, I never got that autograph in 96 of Muhammad Ali. Remember I told that story? I never got that one.
Big mistake.
So as I met him and hung out with him on the elevator there a little bit. So 06, Steven Spielberg and Lech Walesa, the former Polish politico, whatever you want to call him, were holding the Olympic flag in the opening ceremonies. I go back up to the press box and... Are you looking at it right there? Yeah, Steven Spielberg and Lech Walesa are two of the people holding the Olympic flag. And so I go up to the press box, and they're right there. They're sitting right there answering questions from reporters and stuff. So I sit down, and once again, I have the opening ceremonies ticket in my pocket because you just carry it. And I speak with Lech Walesa a little bit, and then I sit and speak with Steven Spielberg. And so we're talking, and I say, I kind of briefly tell him the story. I said, you know, I once had a chance to have Muhammad Ali autograph my opening ceremonies ticket in 96. He goes, really? I said, yeah, and I didn't do it. I, you know, just didn't bring myself to do it. He was my childhood hero, blah, blah, blah. I was intimidated. I said, well, would you mind signing it now? So I've got in my office, I think you might have seen this one when you were at my house. In my office, I got the 2006 opening ceremonies ticket signed by Steven Spielberg, who held the Olympic flag that day.
Would you rather have Ali, though?
For me personally, yeah, but Spielberg is Spielberg. I mean, come on now.
And let's be honest, it would have been pretty classless of you to ask Ali to give you an autograph.
Come on.
Given the circumstance.
He was signing back then.
Okay.
I mean, it might not have been great.
I don't know how good he was signing, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that would have been a very wise move. That would have been kind of classless.
Number three, we do have audio, and that would be from... Well, one of the greatest moments in this town's history.
And Jacob Vallee indicating the game is over, and it will go to a seventh and decisive game on Wednesday.
Rockets Knicks, 1994. John Starks misses the three-pointer. Rockets go on to win it and win their first NBA championship.
Yeah, that was a good series. It was a good series. Man, the Knicks were scrappy. That was a scrappy ass squad.
They were rough.
Derek Harper, tough as nails.
Yep.
You had Derek Harper. You had Anthony Mason. Mm-hmm. You had Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley. It's a mean squad.
And so I'm sitting in the stands in 1996 in Atlanta watching the opening ceremonies. I watch one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life, ever.
It's a bold claim from you.
Well, here it is.
Look who gets it next. The greatest. Once the most dynamic figure in sports, a gregarious man, now trapped inside that mask created by Parkinson's syndrome. So in one sense, a poignant figure, but look at him. Still a great, great presence. Still exuding nobility and stature. And the response he evokes is part affection, part excitement, but especially respect. What a moment.
Well, let me finish the story. I was emotional. I mean, that was my childhood hero. He's the reason. He's
Muhammad Ali taking the torch up.
He was one of the reasons I'm even in this business, Muhammad Ali. I used to feign his. I got into boxing because of him. I used to feign his moves. I got to meet him a couple of times. But that was before this, and that's only half the story of that night. Because that same night, within a half hour of Muhammad Ali lighting the torch, I go back to the elevators to go up to the press box because they're going to have availability with some of Ali's people and some of the people, you know, from the Olympic International Olympic Committee, etc. I run into the elevator, and there's a bank of them, but I run into one elevator, and I hear, "Hold that elevator." And it's a security guard, and I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I put my hand on the elevator. Security guard, another security guard, another couple people, and the greatest. They were holding the elevator for Muhammad Ali. So get this, and this is the moment I'll never forget.
Man.
I'm sitting in the elevator, standing in the elevator.
So, what's up, man?
In my left top shirt pocket is the opening ceremony ticket from the 1996 Olympic Games.
You would have had that, too. It was the most magical. It's like the most magical moment in ceremony history. It's not like just getting Ali's autograph. I have an
it's
Ali
the
autograph.
Night he lit the torch.
That's what I'm saying. I have an Ali autograph. Right. You would have had the one
to
on
my right
the torch, dude.
Is Muhammad Ali. And it's an elevator all the way to the top of the stadium. So I have a couple of minutes to talk with him there. And I said, "That was incredible, champ. I'll never forget it." I said, "That was incredible, champ."
What'd he say?
And he kind of like says something. I don't remember what. And smiles and kind of like not fist bumps me, but kind of like, you know, hits my shoulder or whatever, like in a thank you kind of manner.
Throw you his shirt like me and Joe Green.
Hold on. And I put my hand on the ticket. And I have keep in mind, I have a Sharpie hanging from my lanyard.
Oh.
I put my hand on my ticket, about to pull it off and ask him to sign the opening ceremony's ticket. Yes, it was stupid. And then at the last minute.
I don't think he could have signed it, man.
Yeah, he was. He was signing stuff back then. At the last minute, I just put it back in my shirt and said, nah.
That's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
It was, because I was credentialed. I was covering the event. You're not supposed to do anything.
Who cares?
I know.
You're in an elevator with Ali.
Yeah. The night he lit the torch, the cauldron.
Dude, you made a big mistake.
I made a big mistake. It's almost funny, though, because...
You were in an elevator with Muhammad Ali, man.
The story's almost funnier in a weird way that I didn't get the autograph.
That's insane, though.
But to be able to pass that down to my kids, like, remember that night that he did that?
Bro.
Well, on the way up to the press box, he signed this opening ceremony.
Man. That's
I still
crazy.
Have the ticket. It's just unsigned.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
I'm depressed. We still got one more to go, right?
We got one more to go, and yeah, it's not Ali. It's not Daryl Kyle's no-hitter. It's not the Dream Team. It's not Kerry Strug. It's not Reggie Miller. It's not Michael Westbrook. Those are all on my list. It's not Michael Jordan. It's not Tiger Woods. But it sure was special to be there that night.
Carter gets the snap. He's back in the end zone. He's in trouble. He's sacked for a safety. It's a deuce for the Texans. That's going to put it away. The Texans have done it. They have beaten the Dallas Cowboys on opening night in team history, 19-10.
Seth Payne.
So you're telling me that we've got Muhammad Ali, we've got Michael Jordan, we've got Carl Lewis, we've got all these legendary figures.
And Seth Payne.
Fidel Castro, and the man who rises to the top, the cream of the cream, the creme de la creme, the number one moment of John Lopez's career, not being in an elevator with Muhammad Ali, Seth Payne sacking Quincy Carter.
It's fun to be the penetrator sometimes.
And that's what he was right there.
I said it was kind of
What do you remember about that day?
That and Billy Miller scoring the first touchdown.
Number 83.
Yeah, Billy Miller scoring the first touchdown in Texans history.
He had some freckles. That's the 25 best moments of the career from the career of John Lopez. John, I gave you a homework assignment, and during the dark days of June, as they like to say, you came through.
Thank you, sir. That was fun. That was a lot of fun.
Came through like Muhammad Ali.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.